Then I turned to the sports page, and the Mets had blown it in the 13th inning. Papers can't make losing look like winning. I think the Phillies took it 5-4. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician. But kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it, the sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
It's time for another edition of the sports page on Northern Community Radio. I just saw in U.S. Today that the sports page is one of the most popular shows in America. Joining us this morning, crack reporters Fred Friedman and Kyle Erickson. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, everybody. How are we doing?
Good. Did you see those ratings?
Oh, yeah, right. What are we looking at that, on Fox or what?
Oh, son of a gun. No, we got a lot to talk about, but the thing I want to talk about first... It's been a rough month for losing supreme athletes and characters, good characters of our times. But I'd like to go back to the Vikings game and talk about the decision. Now, the decision was fourth and a half a yard. Make the first down, you win the game. Aggressive approach is to go for it because we've been running the ball like crazy, and I've got no problem with that. Secondly, you kick the field goal it's raining, big deal. It was shorter than an extra point. Then you force the other team to have to score twice just simply to tie and take you into an overtime. Fred, what's your call in the huddle on that play for the coach?
Yeah, well, I would have kicked the field goal and gambled that they couldn't score a touchdown and a 2 point to tie. I understand Zimmer was trying to give his offense some confidence and show confidence in his offensive line, which there's absolutely no reason to show confidence in. So I would have kicked the field goal, but I was okay with that. Here's what I wasn't okay with. All the running back had to do was go wide.
Yeah.
He would have walked into the end zone.
Yeah.
Could have walked into it. I mean, C.J. Ham had sealed the defensive end. And the guy was running with his head down, you know? And so I didn't care for that at all. And it's just the way it is. Hey, they're not very good.
No.
They're just not very good.
They may be in the future because their defensive backs are getting an education very, very quickly. Kyle, what would you to call if you were Coach Rock?
My family and probably my neighbors for a couple houses on either side can vouch for the fact that I was hollering at the television for the Vikings to go for it. I am 100% on board with Zimmer's decision. They were on the road against a Super Bowl caliber team. And for as bad as the Vikings line has been in pass blocking, and they're towards the bottom of the league in those metrics, they've been one of the best run blocking lines in the league. Folks expected them to miss a beat when Dalvin Cook went down with another injury.
Yeah.
But they hadn't. They hadn't. Madison and Mike Boone had picked right up where they left off. And I didn't see any reason not to trust the line to get them about 18 inches when they had done a great job blocking the whole game. And as Fred pointed out, there have been a still frame of that play making its way around the internet that showed a hole that line opened up wide enough to drive a semi-truck through. But Madison hit the line with, just like Fred said, head down, not looking where the hole was, and he could have just moonwalked into the end zone. So
yeah.
I think it was a great gutsy call. I think the offensive line did its job. The coaching staff called the right play, and the running back just didn't execute.
Okay.
Regarding the secondary, this is the other reason why I think it was a fine call to make. This Vikings team is going nowhere. They're not a playoff team. They've got way too many holes, and they may as well, at this point, and it's not fun to say, but they may as well just test out some young guys and play for draft position at this point. And they've got a rebuild to do. This is not tinkering around the edges. They need to start rebuilding.
Sure was good to see Ryan Pressly come in and him do a good job against the... Oh, man. Look at how that ball breaks. I mean, I know he gave up a long double and stuff like that, and I thought he was probably going to lose the game, but he's been a stud, and he couldn't pitch for the Twins, so that's a tough one. Let's talk about the playoffs a little bit. Tampa Bay got beat last night by Houston, so that's 3-1, correct?
Yep, correct.
And I certainly hope that they do not show Dusty Baker spitting anymore. They go to Dusty Baker, and he spits probably 40 times during a game. Keep the goddamn cameras off him. Secondly,
why do they do that?
Why? I don't understand. And then you zoom in, and you'd think if you were the producer, you'd say, okay, cut back to the game. You know, he lifts his thing and he spits a bunch. Oh, anyway.
Why does the producer and director, they give him too much coverage? He's got a toothpick in his mouth. I understand he's a very popular manager. I'm not saying he's a bad guy. He's a good guy. But why do you show all the, especially youngsters, a guy spitting and with a toothpick in his mouth? What? It's clearly a television decision, John.
It's got to be. I don't know if you noticed that stuff, Kyle, but it's pretty bad. Okay, what's the other one? Los Angeles came out and scored 11. I didn't know this. They scored 11 runs in the first inning, kind of maybe a little bit upset for getting down 2-0.
All-time Major League Baseball playoff record for runs in an inning. That's a good way to make a statement because they had been pretty well outclassed by Atlanta the first two games.
Fred?
They're down 2-1. The people that run TV and sell ads, they want the Los Angeles and the media market in the World Series. But the Braves have been hitting the ball hard. Dodger pitching has been kind of injured and kind of hurt. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta wins it at all, you know, at all. Tampa has to be a huge favorite. I mean, they're up 3-1. I like their pitching a lot. But we'll see what happens. I mean, Tampa gets no TV coverage. The national TVs don't cover them. Their stadium is far and away the worst of in all four major league sports. It's just terrible, and I've been there. It's just awful.
And it's empty.
It's empty, and they got catwalks that pop flies hit all the time.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Think about this, guys. So the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox get a lot of flack for winning by outspending the league, right? And even the Houston Astros are in the top 10 in payroll.
True.
The Rays have the 28th highest payroll, third from the bottom in the league.
Wow.
Jose Altuve makes more money than the entire Rays starting lineup.
Oh.
Yep.
And on that budget, they have been able to assemble a fearsome pitching staff, the best defensive team I have seen in a really long time, and enough pop that they are a legit threat to win the World Series with a team payroll of under $30 million.
So I'm going to quote guy who was raised in the Tampa organization in Rocco Baldelli. And he says that's because they have great scouts who spot pitchers and they draft pitchers in rounds 1-3 year after year after year after year and then intentionally keep them for 4 years in the big leagues when they're due for the youth, when they become free agents, they don't even bid for them. And they just redraft and redraft and redraft. So that's not Fred talking. That's not KXE talking. That's Rocco Baldelli, the Twins manager who was raised in the Tampa system.
So where is...
It's not dissimilar from how the Oakland A's have managed to be a pretty good competitive team with a pretty low payroll year in and year out.
What nobody likes, including the three of us, what nobody likes is the Tampa, St. Petersburg metropolitan area do not support them. And that's a fact.
Yeah,
look it up. That's a fact.
Say, where's the World Series going to be?
That's a good question. I thought it was going to be in Texas.
Oh, in Texas. Oh,
that was the plan, I think.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Unless they changed it, did they change it?
No, I don't know. I just was curious how all this is working. And how has no fans in the crowd affected both of you by watching it on TV? Which normally means who cares because you're not sitting in the crowd. But
yeah.
Fred, how do you feel when you watch a ball game?
I think I would love to go to the game and watch. I think it helps the visiting team. It puts less people yelling and screaming in the stands. I think it puts some pressure on hitters and some pressure on pitchers. So I think it definitely is helps the visiting team somewhat.
Kyle?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think it affects the game or the quality of the enjoying watching it nearly as much as with the NBA. You know, not having fans in the stands there made it just about unwatchable. With a telecast of Major League Baseball, most of the shots are tight shots, so you don't really see it as much. But when you're in a late close game and you would love to have the energy of the fans on their feet, clapping and screaming, especially now in the playoffs, I definitely miss that.
There's this episode last night in the game where Brantley fouled a ball off his foot. Then the very next pitch fouled the ball off his foot again. There's like an old rule in baseball and in soft, fast pitch softball. Don't touch it. Don't show weakness. Did you see Brantley walk down to first base? Didn't say a word. Came back
in.
The very next pitch hits the within an inch of the same spot.
Yeah. Anyway. Here's something else. Here's something else, fans and listeners, to consider. And all the major league umpires say this. I've had a major league umpire tell me this all the time. When there's people in the stands yelling and screaming, the home plate umpire does not hear over 90% of what people from the dugouts are saying. When there's nobody in the stands, they hear it all.
I bet.
They hear it all.
So let's talk about some of the losses we've experienced, and we have a brand new one. Bob McDonald, the winningest coach in Minnesota high school sports history, died Wednesday in Hibbing at age 87 after being diagnosed with COVID-19. He's coached Chisholm boys for 53 years. That is not a typo. And for 59 seasons total, won 1,012 games in his career before retiring after the 2013 and 14 season. Fred?
Well, Chisholm basketball in small college basketball in Minnesota was legendary. McDonald was a guy who went to Michigan for one semester as a youngster, didn't like him, then came back to go to junior college and play ball at UMD. Won a lot of games, big believer in presses, which is far more effective in small town gyms than it is in large gyms. Believed in all these strict rules about haircuts and all kinds of other things, which I don't think matters one way or the other. And the guy, he's a winning coach, and he has a heck of a lot of former players, many of whom listen to this show regularly on Thursday and have grown up to have fine, productive lives.
I think they...
But he had a good run, you know?
Yeah, I think they were even required to wear ties.
Yeah, he had a good run.
Kyle, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my dad taking me down to watch Chisholm play in the state basketball tournament at Williams Arena. I was a huge basketball fan as a kid. I played the game as soon as I was old enough to walk. And my dad took me down to the state tournament specifically to watch Bob McDonald's Chisholm team with his son Joel McDonald, who was one of Minnesota's all-time great scorers in high school basketball history, to watch one of the most fundamentally sound teams that you would ever see. And Bob knew how to coach the game the right way, and he put together an awful lot of really good teams. And I was really, really glad that I got the chance to watch them play a couple of times.
Our condolences go out to the large McDonald's family. Okay, Fred, you want to talk about some people. Let's hear it.
Well, we've lost six Hall of Famers in the last few months. Six Hall of Famers. Pitchers Bob Gibson and Whitey Ford, two of the four or five greatest World Series pitchers of all time, and longtime Mets star Tom Seaver, and three offensive and defensive stars in Lou Brock and Al Kaline and Joe Morgan, who had a great career on the field for Houston and Cincinnati, and a great career, worked many, many, many years in the front office of the Hall of Fame, and a 20-year career as a sports announcer. Six superstars, high-character people. Al Kaline was as good a right fielder as ever played in the game. If I could pick one person I would not want to bat against, it would be Bob Gibson. Yeah. They asked somebody, what were your chances of hitting Bob Gibson off the street if you were just another minor league or Division I NCAA player? And the answer was less than zero. So Whitey Ford won more World Series games than anybody else. A really bad year for classic baseball. Six Hall of Famers died in the last few months.
Yeah. Kyle, you of course you remember some of them.
Oh yeah, I don't have the depth of baseball history that Fred does. I always marvel at that. But I have loved reading about the all time greats who played before my time, and was a huge baseball card collector when I was a kid, and I remember marveling at the stats on the back of some of these giants of the game on the back of their cards. And you know, Bob Gibson's 1968 season is one of the best seasons a pitcher's ever put together. You know, his famous 1.12 earned run average. These guys are lions from just a different era. Bob Gibson had over 250 complete games in his career, and now if any pitcher has three complete games in a year, people talk about him as a workhorse. These are not just Hall of Famers, not even just elite Hall of Famers. These are guys who were the iconic player for their franchise in ways. Baby Gibson was the best pitcher in the history of one of baseball's most storied franchises. I think probably a lot of people my age and younger don't understand how great Joe Morgan was.
Yeah.
Like they know the name. They know him from being a commentator. He's a top 30 all-time baseball player. If you look at wins above replacement or whatever metric, Joe Morgan was as good as it gets.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. You know, did it. He's a little guy. He's, what, 5'7", 5'8", Fred? Just a...
5'7", 5'8".
Yeah, a little guy, but my goodness, he hit for more power than I think a lot of younger people know, and a bunch of years with on-base percentage over 400 is just incredible. I wish I had been born a little earlier so I could have seen some of these guys live.
Kyle, yeah. John, there's disadvantages being raised in a large city. I was raised in Chicago, but I want to share with you a big advantage. I saw every one of those players in person many, many times, mm-hmm. having grown up with public transportation available and ball clubs in both leagues.
Hmm.
I saw every one of them many times. How lucky am I?
I love Joe Morgan's arm pumping like a chicken wing. Boom!
Yeah.
You do that.
He patterned his play after another short Hall of Fame player, who's second baseman, named Nellie Fox.
So, Kyle, you're talking about pitching. Yesterday was the first time two pitchers this year went over six innings in a playoff game.
Yeah.
And it's like earth-shattering. Now, I want to say something. I saw something I had never seen. I think it was Houston. I've always wondered. I know this is silly. I was always wondering why people lead off in baseball. Okay? Because at first base, I'm talking now, or I guess any base. Because the pitcher, I saw a guy standing on first base while the pitcher was delivering the pitch. And I'm thinking to myself, if the runner's standing on first base and not leading off at all, the pitcher's not going to pay any attention to him. You can use the base as leverage as the starting block. I'm just wondering, Fred, in your dramatic history and brain, has anybody not ever led off a first and gained an advantage?
The only reason to do that is whatever you could do to get that first baseman to play closer to the bag to give the left-handed hitter more area to hit the ground ball through the right field to get a hit. That's the best reason. The more that first baseman moves off, the more ground that they cover. Other than that, you just scared to death of being picked off.
Yeah, I know.
The reason, frankly, that they're taught to lead off is can you get the third on a base hit or only the second?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what they're taught to. That's the history of it, the way you do it.
But I would like to have a test of somebody being 6 feet off of first base and then stealing versus someone standing at first base with his foot in the bag as a starting block and see who's faster.
So I was at a Twins game at the Metrobone when Kirby Puckett got a hit against Toronto, against Jack Morris, or Morris pitched for Toronto. Gets to first base, and Puckett was a big talker on the bases, of course. And he's talking to another big talker that, Kyle, you know this name, so do you, John. John Olerud, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So Puckett and Olerud are having this conversation, just talking to each other, right? And Morris gets angry that they're not paying attention to the, you know, that they're talking to each other, talking to the enemy. And he throws over to first with Puckett right on the base, and the ball goes between Olerud's nose and Puckett's nose.
Old school. Speaking of school, man, we got to get out of here. Thanks, you guys.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. That's the sports page on Northern Community Radio. I want to thank Kyle Erickson and Fred.